Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the Atlanta podcast, where we speak with the famous, Atlanta famous, infamous, and folks that I just plain find out interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, haven't said that in a while. I am your host, Matt B. Davis. I think I've said that in a while. Thanks so much for listening. It means the world to me as we grow this thing. We grow this little thing called the Atlanta Podcast. To be honest with you folks, I got another podcast I've been doing a long time, the Obstacle Racing Media Podcast. And if you like the sound of my voice or how I ask people questions and you care at all about obstacle racing, that's a good place to go. We've got a pretty good audience over there. 5 years, 250 plus episodes. That's a lot of history. That's a lot of relationship with various athletes and race people and people who listen. But this is a new relationship. We are just getting started. Some of you are along for the ride since the beginning. Some of you just getting on the train, that's fine, because a friend said, dude, you should listen. Matt's a pretty funny guy. Ask some good questions. So yeah, I want to say welcome and thank you. It means a lot. This podcast is free, but what you could do for me that I'd appreciate is drop me a note on Facebook or iTunes. I know you've been thinking about it. I know you're like, I mean to do that. And I know this is a very passive medium. So you're listening because you don't have to do anything. You're running, you're driving, you're on the treadmill, you're working out, you're lifting some weights, right? But hey, this is your buddy Matt asking you as a favor for all this awesome free content, drop me a note. And or leave it on iTunes. Either way, I'll be happy. Either way, I'm good. iTunes, great. Note, great. Both, great. Matt B. Davis on all platforms. Email is mattbdavis@icloud.com. Also, are you listening from somewhere other than Atlanta? We have analytics that say people are listening all over the world. I never know how to believe those. Are those robots? Are those bots? Are they web something or others? If you're listening to this outside of the immediate Atlanta, Georgia area, let me know. On today's episode, English Nick Part 2. Now, if you haven't heard Part 1, you really won't miss much. It's really okay. This is not a, I don't understand what's going on kind of Part 1 and Part 2. It's more of a just ending, and that was the beginning. So go back and listen if you want, and if you haven't, that's fine too. You can start now. And then go back and listen to all the wonderful, wonderful content we had. So, where we left off, last week, Nick was talking about how much fun it is to do podcasts because you can curse. So, we'll begin exactly where that ended last week. Away we go.
Podcast. So, when you go into a radio studio and you crack the mic, you're somehow conditioned not to cuss. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
I don't know why that is, but, you know, I do cuss a lot in real life, so... Yeah, fuck yeah for podcasts. They're awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
Although you can say more than you could, like, you know, 20 years ago, you can certainly say more now than you could say.
Yeah, yeah. It's like TV, isn't it? TV's more, you know, like Walking Dead, they say shit and stuff on there like that.
Right.
And
you seem to be a pretty laid-back guy. Do you sweat much or the things that keep you up at night at all?
You know, when you run a small business like Dr. Bombay's, there's sometimes some things that you're, oh, shit, the freezer's broken again or the AC's not working or,
right.
You know. But no, not normally. I'm 50 years old now, and I kind of don't worry about the small stuff. Like, I'm like, you know, oh, there's a credit card payment to make or whatever. I don't care. Like, I'm getting up, I'm breathing, I'm doing stuff that I love. So I don't really, yeah.
Are there days, though, that you, I don't want to say, like, can't get it up? Like, you just, like, you don't feel like English?
Days when you phone it in, you mean?
Yeah.
Now and again. But, not. I mean, it's like the Mettlesome gig. You know, you're on stage on a Friday and Saturday night. I start the night at 10:30. I'm singing three or four songs. I'm off to the side singing, and you're the host of the party,
right?
You know, and so it's very rare this happens. But a couple weeks ago, a couple guys walked in there, and sometimes halfway through the night, I'll sing, and the bass player who runs it will be like, "Hey, let's do another song just to get the room moving." You know, if we had a couple of not even duds, but just the songs have been there. So, because some of those millennials don't react well to Boston. Or Kansas, you know what I'm saying? They like that's how our list has changed now because we're dealing with a younger audience after 14 years. Green Day, Jimmy Eat World, All-American Rejects, The Killers, you know, that stuff's more popular than Journey and Queen.
Than More Than a Feeling. Well, I think Queen
transcends. Bohemian Rhapsody. Oh, Bohemian Rhapsody is huge every night.
Well.
And we have a lot of tracks behind that. You know,
got to have some balls, though. That's like a 7 minute.
But the whole room sings it. It's like Don't Stop Believing. Whole room sings it.
Right.
So whatever you're doing on stage doesn't really matter.
Right.
Unless you're an outstanding
singer.
Singer.
Right. Do you see that documentary, by the way?
Oh.
The Thai guy, Filipino guy?
No, the guy for Journey. I haven't seen it. No.
Oh. Fascinating.
Arnell Pineda, is that his name?
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
He seems like the most humble guy in the world.
Well, it's interesting because it's just like, just sort of a, I'm trying to think how I want to say this, sort of like looking into, because you know, we hear these songs every night,
yep.
Blown away by them. They mean so much to us in our life, wherever we've heard.
Mm-hmm.
This song is the first song I got laid to, whatever.
Yeah.
But these guys are like, this is them and their livelihood, and like they're yeah. and it's a company, it's a machine.
Yeah.
So he's like,
they've been getting into it lately, right, too.
And he's like, listen, this is, I know you kind of want to sing it like this, but this is how the song needs to be sung.
Oh, yeah, I know,
right? Mm-hmm. And anyway, what's his name is clearly like the brains, not Neil Sean, the other guy.
Yeah, the guy that Neil Sean's been falling out with lately.
Oh, are they fighting?
Oh, there was a thing where the other guy,
I think it's the keyboard
name?
Guy. It's the keyboard
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, well, I was never the biggest Journey fan. Still really aren't. I get it, but it's not something I would buy.
That's how I feel about the Eagles.
See, I felt that way about the Eagles until I saw the documentary.
Really?
The Eagles?
I somehow hung in there for 3 hours. I don't know how I did.
Well, I love the first part. Second part, not so much. First part explains to me, okay, Don Henley and Glenn Frey, even though they always seem like assholes in interviews,
right?
They really are good human dudes. And again, it's their livelihood. It's their business.
Right.
You know?
But they did ask for more money than the other guys?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they started it, right?
But dude, at that level of bread,
there should be enough for everybody. Yeah,
and that's why the one guy, he's like, "Well, fuck you then."
Yeah. Well, anyway, that guy knows somebody or is related to somebody who works in the White House.
Okay.
So he got to go and visit with Trump.
Right.
And Neil Schoen was like, "That's not what we're about," you know. And and there was a rumor that they were going to split it, and there was going to be two different Journeys out touring, which would be stupid.
Right, but that shit happens though.
Oh
right?
Yeah,
that shit happens. But that's the other thing too, is that we forget. So when they started with him, when they started with Arnell...
He's the kid they found on YouTube.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's his whole journey, which is a whole other thing. But when they started with
His journey with Journey.
His yeah. journey with Journey. Yeah. But when they started with him, they had kind of fallen off. I think this is... Like, they weren't... Like, right. they were playing... They weren't... I want to say they were playing, like, Six Flags again. Like,
yeah,
it was that bad.
You're right. It hadn't... Yeah.
And now yeah. they've sort of come back in the big, yeah. big way, and the arenas are getting bigger
again.
And
a lot again. Of that's nostalgia, and a lot of that's who the bands they choose to go out with.
Right.
Like, next 2018, they're going to be on a tour with Def Leppard.
Oh, wow.
You know, so every seat will
Def Leppard has never stopped playing, though.
Never stopped.
I saw when I saw Def Leppard at the old Music Midtown, and then they were old.
Yeah.
And now they're still...
My first Def Leppard show was Donington 86. The first show back playing drums with one arm.
No.
Yeah. And Motorhead were on the bill. Ozzy was on the bill. And Def
Leppard.
That's
the one where like everyone was like crying.
Yeah. Def Leppard at that point were way bigger in America than they were in England.
Right.
But as an England rock fan, as somebody like me who had bought Pyromania as my first cassette because it spoke to me, because they were, at that point, I was, 16, 17, and they were one of the younger bands on the circuit.
Oh, yeah. They were
really
new.
And it had a poppier edge to it, which I didn't realize at the time is why I really liked it, I think. But, oh, there wasn't a dry eye in Donington that day for that show.
I can't believe you were at that show.
And
that's
every
so
drummer,
fucking cool.
Like, you know, Cozy Powell, Lars Ulrich, all these guys have flown in to stand behind that kit and see what the hell was up. How is he going to do this? The feet, you know, it's just amazing. And so, yeah, the one thing about Def Leppard is so much of that stuff is the register on the vocals are so high when it was recorded. Joe can't really hit that anymore. There's some auto-tuning going on at those shows.
You
I think
so?
I think so.
Yeah?
A little bit.
Yeah?
But
do you play a lot of Def Leppard on on your show?
On 97 on the River?
Yeah.
Oh, we play a lot of Def Leppard, yeah.
Right.
Mainly, well, everything. Well, we do everything from, you know, the first On Through the Night, Pyromania, Hysteria, and then...
I feel like a lot of Rocket has been on there.
There's Rocket, there's Armageddon. Those songs are testing well lately, I guess.
Is that what they say?
They do. You do music tests, and people say what they want to... Like, you...
Say
one way we do it is on the app, you can vote for songs
on the River app.
On the River app, you can vote for songs you want to hear. you're freaking out because you're hearing this in person, though.
Yes. Dude, listen, I had to... Listen, I met the Siri lady. Did you see that? Did I tell you that?
No.
Oh, I met the
lady is the voice of Siri?
The fucking voice of Siri, dude.
Where'd you meet her?
And I got her on the show.
I want to meet the voice of Siri.
And it wasn't the Siri part. I'll show you a quick little video she did with me. But at one point, she did the Delta train like in front of me.
Oh yeah.
Like, so, next stop is, and I was like, you know what I mean? Like, I shuddered because I'm like, that's holy awesome. Shit. But here you say the River app in person.
Because app is where it's at these days. That's big business.
But you say that a lot. More than you say down at Nally Ford, you say the River app.
Yeah, yeah. Because that just goes into everything. Everything's right on the app.
Hey, guys.
Like your chance this week to win a trip to see Roger Waters in Toronto.
Right. I like this bucket list thing. That's a very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like, radio stations are always doing, like, the giveaway, but that seems to be a pretty good.
You win the cash, but then the huge thing is going to see.
Right. That's
to me. Guns N' Roses in Los Angeles next week.
To me, that's, and I found myself thinking, which is probably what they want to do, which would I rather do? Would I rather see so-and-so in Dublin? Who was it?
It was Queen in Dublin.
Would I rather see Queen in Dublin, which I would,
or
whatever in Los Angeles?
Well, I think the Dublin thing was just getting out of the country and going.
Well, getting out of the country, but it's also fucking Queen. Man.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Adam Lambert can do it, man. He's a good vocalist.
So I saw a quick little thing. So the first time Guns N' Roses was supposed to play here was back when Axl was like canceling every show.
Yeah.
So that tour got canceled.
What year?
Well, it had to be. I still lived here. It had to be like. Maybe they played here around, must have been Use Your Illusion tours. What's that, 91, 92?
Yeah.
So opening up was Brian May, okay?
With a solo band.
Yeah, just him. So that gig got canceled. So Brian May played either the Viroxy or the Variety Playhouse or whatever. I mean, to watch him like as close as I am to me and you, and he played.
Variety Playhouse is one of the best venues in the city.
And he played, I want to say it's Little Wing, but it's not called Little Wing. What's the song?
No, there is a song called Little Wing that Stevie Ray Vaughan and Jimi Hendrix did.
Was it? But it wasn't that. It's some. Anyway, it was one of those things that like everybody. When one of those gigs that like when everybody's singing and you want to like sing and cry at the same time. Yeah. I wish I could remember it now. Yeah. But it was like a going to church type. Experience.
Yeah, I've got, you know, there's a few bands. Like I was the biggest Faith No More fan.
Really?
You know, after I got done with my metal phase. You know, in England, you had a couple of choices for festivals in the summer because now there's festivals every weekend.
Pretty much.
Back then it was Glastonbury in June, the mother of all festivals.
Right.
And you'd go there and you could see everybody, anything. Like I remember one year I saw, one afternoon, it was 95 Glastonbury, I saw Johnny Cash, Jeff Buckley, Tricky, Massive Attack, and Portishead all in the same day.
That's pretty amazing.
Unbelievable. That's Glastonbury. Donington, early August, metal. That's your, you know.
And now it's called the Download Festival.
Now it's called Download. But back then it was six bands on one stage one afternoon. Late August, Reading. Unbelievable. The cream of the crop. I mean, I was there. I saw Nirvana twice at Reading. I was there that day when he jumped into the crowd with that brown leather jacket on that's on the video for In Bloom or whatever. So, man, I saw Nirvana before Dave Grohl was in the band with about 100 people in the room.
Where?
At Portsmouth University in the south of England.
Wow.
And they were opening for a band called Tad from Seattle. Tad had gotten more press in Kerrang before Nirvana, so they were kind of a bigger deal at that point.
Wow.
No roadies, no Kurt Cobain and Chris Novoselic, no shoes on. Kurt had hair down to his ass. It was awesome. But anyway, those were the three festivals, right? And so how did we start talking about festivals?
Queen, Brian May.
Oh, Faith No More.
Faith No More.
So when you started going to Reading, and actually saw Faith No More, first show with Mike Patton in the band in England at Portsmouth University, same thing. So you go to Reading and you see more of these bands. And so Faith No More were one of the, Pixies were the band that got me out of metal. When I first saw the video for Monkeys Gone to Heaven, I'm like, oh, you don't have to have long hair and pointy guitars to make great music and be kind of dangerous. I like my rock and roll to have a bit of danger to it. Right. I like it to be good quality. Also, like Adele records, you know what I'm saying? Like, if it's good, it's good.
Right.
So
a hit is a hit.
So I just idolize Mike Patton. I have done for years. And now he's become this genius.
Right.
You know, he's got Fantomas and he's got all these other bands he does. His new band is called Dead Cross. And that's Dave Lombardo, the drummer of Slayer, who's not the original drummer of Slayer. Him and Dave have done projects before. It's a hardcore band, right? And so the story goes that Dave Lombardo has a new Dead Cross record, or he wants to do a new Dead Cross record. His singers quit on him. He calls up Mike Patton to say, hey, we want to release this new record. We're going to do a new record on your label, Ipapac Recordings. Oh, and by the way, Mike, would you like to be the singer because our singer quit? He's like, man, I'm fucking 50 years old. I can't be in a hardcore band. Dude, it's 30 minutes of the best hardcore music you've ever heard.
Really?
It's awesome. They're touring right now. They're not coming to Atlanta, but Dead Cross. But Mike Patton, so talking of emotion, Faith No More play the Masquerade Music Park. God rest its soul.
Right.
Screw Atlanta for killing that venue. I mean, look, I talked to the guys at Masquerade. I think they're staying at Underground for a while.
Somebody said it wasn't that bad, but yes, to me, Masquerade is always the original.
Yeah. So the Music Park gig with Faith No More, I swear to God, the first 20 minutes, I'm bawling. I was such a huge fan, and they hadn't toured in so long.
Right.
And it sounded so great. Like, just real. It's real, man. You know, real performers. There's no bullshit with Mike Patton.
Right.
He is what he is. He'll call. Have you seen that famous? There's a famous backstage interview with him. He's at a festival somewhere. And I guess it was when he was. It was that. He had a project where he had rappers and stuff, different guests on. Bjork was on one song, all these different. Came out a few years ago. It was a big deal. So he was on that tour. And while he's doing this interview, Wolfmother are playing the other stage. And woman, he got off in the distance. Woman. He's like, are you hearing this? What fucking year is this, man? Wolfmother, you fucking suck. Like, it just goes off.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, Mike Patton is the real deal. So he's one of my, always will be one of my musical heroes. And Dead Cross is definitely something people need to check out. If you like your stuff hardcore.
Right.
You know, it's not an easy listen, but it's definitely brilliant.
Yeah, see, I've fell into that trap of got older, mm-hmm. stopped going to shows, mm-hmm. like, I stopped buying music. I mean, I know nobody buys music anymore.
Yeah, but like, yeah.
But like when it used to be not too long ago that at the festival, I would at least recognize the big name.
Sure.
And now it's to where I'm like,
Oh, it's like Music Midtown this time, right? I mean, I know Music Midtown is, they've since they've come back in Piedmont Park, they're pushing for younger audience every year. So this year, there is no classic rock. Weezer and Blink-182 are your classic rock bands at Music Midtown now.
Right.
You know, so
But I'm saying, at Shaky Knees, I don't even recognize the big names.
Oh, yeah, because that's way indie.
But people are all over that and all this EDM shit. People are bananas. Our
producer for the Eric Von Hessler show, he's 28 years old, Jared Yamamoto. He just went to Imagine Music Fest. Like, he had to take the Monday off because he was recovering from whatever he
did. Do you ever go to those shows?
No, but I get the drug culture within those shows because I'll give you my example. I've seen Widespread Panic sober.
Right.
And I've seen them on ecstasy.
Right.
I get why people take ecstasy. Like, when you, because I'm not a jam bander. I never have been.
Me either.
You know? And so when I first saw Widespread Panic, I had a beer in me at Music Midtown one afternoon. And I was walking from one stage to the other. And they were on. I'm like, okay, I get it. This is all going to sound the same for an hour and a half. That's how I feel about it. And I had friends who try and they'd give me their bootlegs of, you know, how they trade those bootleg CDs.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I'll listen to it. I know what it is. I went to Phillips Arena to see them. And I was dating somebody at the time who had a hookup onto me.
Right.
I'd never done ecstasy in my life. It's early 2000s. So I pop it. And I'm like, nothing's happening. 15 minutes in, I'm like, oh, okay, sure. It doesn't matter who's on stage now. Right. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I saw The Dead, and I'm glad so I could check that, tick that box, as we say.
Yeah.
Again, late 80s, before he died, and I was like, you got to see him live, man. And I went and saw him live, and I was like, okay.
What do you think of the Dead and Company that's touring now?
I don't like that music in the first place. Yeah. So why am I going to like the second?
You're a fan of John Mayer, I guess.
It was that.
John Mayer, he's the guitar player.
Oh, okay.
And there's members of the Allman Brothers and Rat Dog that play with Dead.
I'm glad for what's his name?
Bob Weir.
That he's kept it going.
Have you seen that documentary, The Other Guy?
Mm-mm.
Tell us Bob Weir's story.
Right.
And it's, oh man, it's like, for somebody who knew, I knew nothing about the Grateful Dead,
right.
apart from whatever.
Touch of Grey.
Yeah, I should know that.
Sugar Magnolia.
Play it at least once a month. That movie just tells the whole story. Like, how they didn't like this drug culture that was following them around. You know, hey, good for you, man, if you can make a living by selling what you need to sell. But when it starts killing people, we're not cool with that, you know? So that was part of the reason that I think they just knocked it on the head for a while. They were over that culture.
Right. Well, and I know that he's had to, like, carry the mantle of this, you know, dead guy, which is pretty tough, so.
Oh, yeah, and Jerry Garcia wasn't an easy guy to deal with.
Apparently, that was
the word.
And
when he got later in life, when he was bloated and he was doing God knows what, like, it wasn't.
So when you say is there music that you have to play now that you're just like, ugh?
Well, you know, in commercial radio, your program director's choosing the songs. You know, you're not, there's not a lot of freedom with it. You know, so there's a playlist when you come in. You know, it's in the system and you just talk when you have to talk, you know.
Right.
So you have to get creative with classic rock because these are records everybody knows.
Right.
But what's happening in 2017 for the first time is the 18-34 age group that we never cared about in classic rock.
Right.
They are coming in droves now. It's because I think that's because a lot of modern music, I sound like an old guy, but there's a lot of modern music that's not going to be around. Who are the Zeppelins and the Eagles of the, who's going to be on the radio in 20 years that you're hearing now?
Right.
You know?
Well, but see, that's the 30 thing.
30 years even.
Well, that's the thing is that it feels like there's always going to be an older brother or
who turns you on.
Turns you on to Zeppelin or Van Halen or Metallica. Yeah. And yeah, nobody's kind of past those three torches yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, could you call Green Day that because it's been that long?
That's another conversation.
But they're still even playing, right?
They're still relevant, I think.
Right, that's what I mean. Van Halen isn't relevant anymore.
What's weird for me is when Green Day first came out, as a kid who grew up with older cousins in the 70s who were going to see the Pistols and the Clash and Echo and the Bunnymen.
Right.
Punk rock, right. That's why I started.
Real punk.
Real punk.
Ramones.
When Green Day came out, I'm like, I get why it works, but this isn't punk rock.
Right.
Number one, they're on Warner Brothers, you know?
Right.
That's always what killed me about alternative music. Like, right. Once you're on a major, you're not alternative anymore. I'm sorry, you know? So I've liked the later stuff from Green Day. I like their concept albums. I think that, you know, American Idiot's one of the best songs ever recorded. I think it's all, I think that he's a great songwriter.
Well, but know? I think what makes Green Day Green Day and not Blink-182 or the other like 25
sure.
bands that were just
is that there's some heritage to it.
Those
they borrow from the heroes,
right?
You know,
but Green Day are the real deal, and I feel like Rancid were the real deal.
Oh, Rancid are awesome.
But like even Blink, I'll give a little bit of credit to because like there's some songs you can't not fucking sing.
What's My Age Again? And All the Small Things. We do those at Meddlesome now.
Right.
And the room goes insane.
Right. You can't not love All the Small Things. It's just one of those songs. But then I'm trying to think of the other ones that are like 20 generations worse. That are like, oh my
god.
Well,
there's all these
Good Charlotte and all those.
Oh, yeah.
Shitty bands.
It's just.
But I feel like Green Day holds the mantle up to punk. Right? I think they're okay.
I think they're okay. I think that if you probably talk to some of the old punkers like Johnny Rotten and stuff, Johnny Lydon, he'd probably have some stuff to say about it. But then again, the Pistols came back and did a huge tour.
Right, I saw that tour.
So I had no interest in that at all.
Right,
and I love the Sex Pistols.
Right. Do you know Steve?
Never met Steve, no.
Yeah?
No.
All right. Well, he's in your line of work now.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, it's an awesome radio show. People rave about it.
Right.
You know somebody else who I love in rock and roll and he gets a bad rap from time to time? I like Dave Grohl. I think Dave Grohl is the real deal.
I just saw that documentary.
Yeah, it's a great documentary.
Right.
And he's always finding ways to, like all the big bands, like U2, Metallica, every record they reinvent themselves a little bit.
Yeah, but the other thing, and again, it's like you sometimes forget, it's like going to see a band in concert and you go, holy shit, I love all these songs.
Yeah, you forget how many they have.
So on that Dave Grohl documentary, it was like, you know, almost over, and then they played, was it There Goes My Hero or just one of those songs that I'm like, oh my God. And that one too, it was like the bigger, it was like, holy shit, these 20 other songs that are pretty amazing.
I think those bands, whether it's, you know, these are bands that were huge in the 90s and are still huge now, the Green Days and the Foo Fighters.
Right. The Foos.
And I think what cuts them apart, especially Dave Grohl, is he's not afraid to borrow.
Right.
He's also not afraid to be on stage with his classic rock heroes.
Right.
He's not afraid to get people on the record. Like Bob Mould was on the last record.
Right.
You know, Husker Du were one of the biggest influences on Dave Grohl's life. And he gets Bob in to sing a chorus, you know, it's just, or a bridge. It's like, those are things to me that mean a lot because I feel as a music fan, I have my heroes and most of them can do no wrong. And I have so much respect for those people. And I feel that's what Dave Grohl has. He has respect for all of it. But then he'll turn up and say, Lord's the best thing to happen to pop music. Now, I may disagree with him on that, but I get why people like Lord. You know, it's not my cup of tea, but I get why it works, you know?
So,
to answer our original question, I don't know where it's going. I think it's just, there's going to be, it's product. It's a lot of product now.
Right.
You know, it's like.
Oh, we were saying, like, there's always the older brother to turn you on to Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And who did you say is getting the biggest love right now?
Who are we talking about?
On Meddlesome?
Oh, they love Blink-182 because they're in their 20s. The kids who come to Meddlesome, most of them, on a Friday and Saturday night, they're in their mid-20s.
Right.
And they grew up listening to Blink-182.
Right.
You know, think about it. When if they're what? How old are we? If you were 25 now, you were born in 1992, right?
Oh my God! Right.
So when you were a kid,
right,
your big brother may have said to you, "Hey, listen to this Blink 182 record."
Right.
You know.
You know what my was on in the when there's like certain like early 70s songs that make me cry.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like it reminds me of being
like
in the
what?
Back.
Like what?
Oh my God! What did I hear the other day that I couldn't? That I was like, oh, this is my fucking. This is my mom's car.
Tennessee, like, I'm not in love.
No.
Which, you know what else is happening right now?
What?
There's a couple of classic rock artists that are getting a serious bump from the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtracks.
What's on those?
Well, everything's on them, but the 10cc I'm Not in Love is on there.
Right.
Aerosmith's on there, I think. Sweet Emotion.
I'm trying to think of like sort of a soft 70s song that I would never
really have.
No, softer. Like Karen Carpenter soft.
Oh,
like
okay.
Something
got,
like
yeah,
that
yeah,
that
yeah,
I
yeah.
heard.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, like I'm 6 years old in
yeah,
my mom's
exactly.
car. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think like that's what you know, music is and does.
You know, Paul McCartney and Wings is like that for me because that's one of the first bands. I remember realizing who Wings were before the Beatles were because I didn't have an older brother.
Right.
I didn't have a mother and father who listened to them. They listened to the radio, but there was no record player.
Right.
So Paul McCartney and Wings spoke to me way before the Beatles ever did.
Yeah.
Because I was...
Which record?
Oh, pretty much all of it. But, you know, like a Band on the Run.
Right.
And then ELO too. ELO was on the radio all the time in England growing up.
Yeah.
You know, Queen... Queen scared the crap out of me. When I first saw the video for Bohemian Rhapsody, I thought they were aliens or something, where their faces are coming out of the darkness.
Right.
I remember, you know, the band The Sweet?
Yes.
Fox on the Run.
Right.
They were one of the first glam acts I'd seen. There was a Thursday night show on TV called Top of the Pops. And that would be one of the Radio 1 DJs, some of who we learned recently were pedophiles and some who weren't. You know, Jimmy Savile, he was this famous radio DJ. After his death, they find out he'd been kiddie fiddling all of his life.
Oh, man.
So he even had a show on primetime BBC One, Saturday night TV show. Kids would write into Jim, "Please, Jim, can you fix it for me?" And he'd make their dreams come true. And they come in, and if they got featured on the show, they'd come on and sit on Jimmy's lap. And he'd give him a...
You're like horrified.
And so there's it all comes out that Jimmy Savile, there'd be a BBC Radio 1 summer tour where the DJs would go to different cities and artists would play and stuff and it would be live on the radio. Apparently Jimmy had a trailer and he'd take these young girls back to the damn trailer. Like, so there was a huge scandal in England with the BBC because the big wigs at BBC knew that some of them knew this shit was going on.
Right.
And because Jimmy Savile was such a household name, they let it happen. And then other comedians and other DJs and comedians got pulled into this and got arrested because they were suspects in this ring. But anyway, Top of the Pops, Thursday night. Spent too much time with Von Hessler. Top of the Pops, Thursday night, it would be a countdown show. And bands would come on, and very often the vocals... Only thing that would be live would be the vocals sometimes, if that. Sometimes they're miming. Like when Nirvana went on Top of the Pops and did Smells Like Teen Spirit, they weren't playing it the way it should be. Dave Grohl was like, you know, just prancing around.
Because he knew that it was...
With the light on it like that. Because the only thing that was live was his mic.
Right.
Top of the Pops is gone now. But, you know, that was a show that turned you on to a lot of stuff. And one of the first glam bands I saw was The Sweet. And I was like, I think I remember asking my mum, like, "Are these boys or girls, Mum?"
Right.
Because, you know, the whole glam thing was that cross-dressing, you know, the high heels and the glittery pants.
Right.
Glitter on their face and hair that I'd never seen on a guy before. Right. Buttfuck England. So, you got three TV channels.
Right.
But that will change in the 80s. When I got out and started seeing bands, you know, and getting into the world, then I, you know, that was all.
Well, you know, we had Dick Clark over here. That was our...
Yeah.
Was the old... what was that on Saturdays? Was the...
American Bandstand.
Bandstand, yeah. And good old Soul Train. That was the...
Yeah. And I love... I mean, there's a performance of David Bowie on one. I think he's on Bandstand or Soul... He's on Soul Train. I think he's doing Fame.
Right.
And it's awesome. It's awesome, you know. So, they're all leaving, man. Bowie was... like, it's not the same without Bowie anymore. Every time I play a Bowie record, I'm like... I'm very often on the radio, so I can't believe he's not on the planet anymore.
Right.
Because it's just... He is... He was so instrumental in everything when you think about music, you know. Just so influential that I don't know where those kind of people are coming from anymore either. You know, you get certain singers of these... not emo, that's the wrong phrase, because emo's done, right? I mean, My Chemical Romance and all that stuff. Which if you ask people who are now in their 20s who were emo kids when they were in their teens, that's not real emo. And well, tell me what emo is then.
Because, what song was My Chemical Romance?
Oh, Join the Black... Again, we do these at Metal Sunday. They had a song called Helena... The Black Parade. "When I was a young boy, my father took me into the city to see a marching band. He said, 'Son, when you grow up, will you be the savior of the broken, the beaten, and the damned?'" Black Parade. It's a raging song. Yeah.
Okay.
I knew about My Chemical Romance really because I was involved with a station called 96.7 The Buzz a few years ago that was put on the air by Clear Channel to fuck with 99X. When 99X was still the biggest thing in town, Clear Channel was like, well, how can we make a dent in their ratings? We'll put on this 3,000-watt little station with kids who've never been on the radio before.
Really?
So, and we were playing the harder edge stuff that 99X may stay away from a little bit too. And we could play whatever. They were playing a lot of what they wanted on that station.
So, but I thought you were on 96 Rock.
Yeah, but that was a sister station in the same building. I wasn't on that station. I helped program it.
Got it.
I was assistant to the programmer at one point. So, man, one of my favorite British bands of the last 20 years is a band called The Stereophonics, who I love.
I've heard of them.
Kelly Jones is one of the biggest best songwriters in the world. And in England, they play arenas. Here, they play the Roxy or the Cotton Club, you know, back in the day,
right,
which I love as a fan of that band. But there was a time when one of their biggest songs ever was a song called Dakota. And it was coming out. I knew that. I knew 99X were going to start playing it at some point. And so I just burnt it to CD from the internet at home, took it in and put it into the system of 96.7 The Buzz and started playing it a couple weeks before they did. I was very proud of that moment.
You got in a big...
Yeah, like...
How did that one go?
You made me feel like the one, made me feel like the one. That's the bridge on it. But it's a good song, man. Dakota. Stereophonics, if you don't know them, check them out.
Yeah.
They're huge in the UK, but they can't make a dent here. But they did play... I saw they were on one of the... TV morning, like Good Morning America or the Today Show, playing one of their new singles the other day because they had a one show at the Plaza in New York a couple weeks ago just to say, hey, we're still on the radar and we got a new album coming out in November or October. So,
yeah, like I said, I never buy music anymore.
You'd like the Stereophonics.
I listen to Pandora in the morning,
yeah,
like when I'm getting dressed. And it's typically either...
Do you choose a channel or an artist so that you get a theme,
yeah,
or do you just choose one of their channels?
No. When Pandora first came out, like I would type in like the Beastie Boys,
yeah,
and like I would get whatever.
Yeah.
Now you can choose like 80s rap, 80s metal. Pretty much I'm sort of stuck in the 80s. Like those are all my stations.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
Sometimes 90s, but I'm just like, I'm a sucker for that 80s stuff. I mean, I'm a sucker for like why that stuff means so much when you're 13 to 15. Like,
I think you're becoming who you are. You're realizing who you are. Like, it's like Neil Peart of Rush says about the song Tom Sawyer. He wrote that song and then he realized, oh, this is about high school. This is about when you're in high school, that's crafting who you're going to be as an adult, you know, how you interact with people and that stuff. So I don't know. I didn't go to high school. I left school at 16.
So you know what song I put on the other day and made me cry my fucking eyes out? No One Is to Blame by Howard Jones.
Oh, dude, yeah. Awesome songwriter.
Well, I always liked that song.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I couldn't stop singing it. And I was like, honey, let's just put it on. And I put it on the phone.
You see him when he came to the Variety?
No.
Last year, I think he came, yeah.
We put it on. We're just listening to the words really intently.
Yeah.
We're both crying.
Yeah.
And I said, honey, if I die before you, I want you to play this at my wedding. Let me play this at my funeral. And she said, why? I said, because I want everybody to cry their fucking eyes out.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it's like...
There's certain songs that do that to me, too.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, you can't even, like... I Googled it to see maybe kind of what he thought it was about, and it kind of doesn't even fucking matter.
No.
Because just those words just are like, just like burn into you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's funny how certain songs have always meant certain things, but as you get older,
right,
and you get married and you have kids, you know?
Right.
It's like Oldham Fisher, who's one of our cast members on the Von Hester Doctrine at WSB, she's actually in Maryland, so she pipes it in. She actually sits in her closet in her apartment.
Literally.
And we dial her in through the access unit. But we talked about near-death experiences today because her and Eric both had one years ago, not together, separately. Eric's had to do with a hospital experience when he had surgery and coming out of the anesthesia. So when he was waking up, what he saw. Oldham and her mother were they were at some beach and they got caught in a riptide and they really thought they were going to drown, you know. And she talked about that. And then she said she always saw it from her perspective as her mother's daughter. Now she has two kids. She has a wee one and like a four-year-old. And she said she was at a therapy session and she was explaining one of her first therapy sessions with this new therapist. And she was explaining this story. And for the first time, she saw it from the mother's perspective. And she just lost it because she thought of how her mother felt that day.
Right.
And her mother had told her in conversations since that happened, look, whatever happened, you were going to survive.
Right.
If I had to die, you were going to survive. I was going to throw you out of that room, get you out.
Right.
Because not only were they dealing with crazy waves pulling them back, the sand was soupy so they couldn't get a grip.
Right.
You know?
It's probably like how you feel about your dogs, right?
Not quite the same, but yeah. I would my new dog, man, I would kill or take a bullet for that dog.
You would.
It's one of those dogs who looks at you and you're like, oh my God, this dog is like the most in tune freaking dog ever.
So if you were in the Riptide, you would throw the dog free.
Dog would go first, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
She's so strong though. She's 60 pounds, so she'd pull me out probably.
Right. All right. So we're going to do, I need to come up with a name for this. Maybe you can help me.
Right.
I'm calling it the Atlanta Quiz, but then people think I'm going to ask them questions they have to get right, but it's more like your favorites.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay. I got to think of another name for it.
So questions about Atlanta?
Yeah, but I want to give it a fun name. It's just sort of like, you know.
Let's do it. I'm good at coming. Because every day on the Von Hesser Doctrine,
right,
that part of the show, we give it, it's got a name for the episode, and very often things that we say will be the title of it.
Of course, right? All right, so you can help me name this quiz after we're done. Okay, so very first question. Do you eat at the Waffle House?
Yes, now and again.
Okay, what do you order at the Waffle House?
I always order whatever the breakfast is with just toast, eggs sunny side up, regular hash browns, and side of bacon.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is your favorite place to eat in Atlanta?
Harry and Sons, a sushi joint in the Highlands.
Harry and Sons, not the grocery store.
No, Harry and Sons is a sushi joint next to Dark Horse.
Okay.
I ate Harry and Sons long before I ever worked at Dark Horse doing meddlesome.
Right.
They also own Sirin, which is on the other side of the block.
Okay.
So Sirin serves more hot dishes. Harry and Sons do hot dishes, but they have great sushi. Amazing sushi.
This is going to be a very good question for you, considering what you do for a living. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite venue to see music in Atlanta?
My favorite venue... Obviously, my favorite karaoke venue, which is also best karaoke, is the Ten High.
Right.
But, I love Variety Playhouse. I love Smith's Old Bar upstairs. That room sounds awesome. And then I don't know about the bigger venues. I mean, it's definitely a variety.
You know who I used to always see upstairs at Smith's, and because I haven't been there in so long, is every Christmas, man, is he even still doing it anymore? Who's the guy? Oh my God, I can't
Big Jim?
No, the guy from the Satellites, Rick Richards.
Oh, Rick Richards, yeah.
No, yeah, not the singer,
Dan Baird.
Not Dan. Rick had his band called the Hellhounds.
Yeah, I know. Because there's a British guy who sings for them,
right?
Kevin.
Are they still?
Yeah, well, they're called the Western Sizzlers now, I think.
Because they would always
and they play at Avondale Cinema now and again,
right?
Which does gigs now out in Avondale.
Because they would play pretty much all covers. Yeah. They do a couple of Satellite songs.
I don't know if Kevin was in the Hellhounds. Kevin Jennings is a British guy too, who moved to Atlanta in the 80s. He was responsible for the Satellites getting signed.
Yeah.
He went to Europe. He went to London with a cassette tape of some of their songs, and that was what got him the deal.
Right. You know who I say the Satellites must have really hated?
Who?
The Black Crowes.
Well, see, Kevin's connected with both of those.
Yeah.
And when Kevin came on my show, that Deep River Music Vault show,
right?
And I didn't know his background with the Black Crowes. So here's the deal. The Black Crowes have recorded Shake Your Moneymaker, the first album with Rick Rubin.
Right.
But Rubin is still shopping the record. Nobody's bought it yet.
Right.
Nobody's signed him. So Rick Rubin's like, okay, go back to Atlanta, play some shows, do whatever. So they come back. They have not the money. They're no manager. So Kevin becomes their manager.
Right.
And they move into his basement. So he's helping them get gigs. He's supporting them, trying to shop the record, as in Rick Rubin.
Right.
Well, then Rick Rubin comes back a few months later and says, okay, I've got your management. It's Van Halen's management. So Kevin gets completely pushed to the side.
Oh, wow.
And at one point, I guess one night, like they were high or whatever, they draw up this pie chart. A pie chart that's equal, because there's five members in the Black Crowes, equal six parts. Kevin's one of the pieces of the pie. He has it to this day. It's all signed by everybody. Didn't mean shit. He took him to court. I don't think he got anything. He lost, I think, yeah.
Well.
But you're right. The Black Crowes came along and just bulldozed everything for a minute.
Right. Oh, and you know who else? I was thinking of them the other day, is Drivin' and Cryin'. Drivin' and Cryin' could not have been bigger in the fucking South.
Right.
And couldn't make a dent anywhere else.
You know, Eric Von Hesser made a documentary about them. He spent 4 years of his life because he's like, okay.
Can I interview your buddy Eric Von Hesler?
Oh, absolutely. You'd love it, dude. Yeah,
because those guys in the South, not just Georgia, in the South, were fucking monsters.
He made a movie.
Every kid in high school fucking...
Oh, my business partner who grew up in Atlanta, same thing.
I mean, they are gods, but then they couldn't...
She has great stories of being at New Year's Eve shows in Athens, Georgia with Drivin' and Cryin'. And another great band from Athens, 5-8, who could have been huge and weren't, you know... So, the documentary is called Scarred But Smarter. It's been out a couple of years. It's on Amazon.
I will buy it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Especially if it supports your friend.
It's awesome. Eric made it. He did the movie, had it ready to go.
Right.
Universal come knock. Perfect. This is great record company stuff. They come knock and they want $35,000 because of the music he's used.
Right.
Driving and Crying is never going to see a penny of that.
So he's like,
so he goes back and edits it, and ends up using. He ends up paying him something because he uses a couple of studio songs,
right.
But he ends up using a lot of the stuff that he recorded while they were live.
Right.
You know, but it's a great little documentary. He just basically wanted to know. He got
what happened.
What happened? Why weren't they ever bigger? Eric moved here from LA in the early 90s to be the regular guy, be on the regular guy show at 96 Rock. And so he started, they would come into, Kevin Kinney would come in and do interviews,
right.
And he got to know him, you know, and so he had this, he wanted to tell the story. So he spent a fortune making this movie over 4 years.
Because I want to know, don't tell me anything.
Scarred But Smarter, the story of Life and Times of Driving and Crying.
Right.
Eric Von Hester directed it. Shot it, the whole thing.
Yeah. If you're like my age or that 5-6 year period,
yeah.
High school, college, they were like,
yeah,
gods.
Yeah. Well, this it's an interesting thing. And I know Kevin Kinney really well. He's one of the nicest guys on the planet, man. And now I think they a while ago, they got away from their manager who they had. And I think they do it all themselves now. And they play every weekend somewhere in the Southeast.
Yeah.
Two or three. They do a Friday, Saturday somewhere, you know. So, Kevin actually is a guest on our podcast now, and he'll come in and play a song on our Christmas special or something.
Yeah. All right, we got away from my little quiz here. So that was your favorite venue. Do you have a favorite Atlanta festival?
Festival. You know, I live in Candler Park, and I like the festival, like the Fall Festival and stuff we have there. They're usually local unsigned acts.
Right.
And it's not the biggest festival in the world. Sweetwater used to be there, but they moved it to Centennial Park.
Right.
They grew it.
And you can walk home.
And I'm always, you know, the thing about doing radio and doing live band karaoke, my weekends are pretty slam, so I don't get to go to a lot of the things I used to get to go to. But I do like the bands that play Shaky Knees.
Right.
Like when there's a Pixies on the bill and Mastodon, it's a nice little mix.
Right.
You know, and I know Tim Sweetwood, he's a stand-up guy, so I'm glad he's doing well with Shaky Knees and Shaky Boots and Shaky whatever he's got going on.
Right, but like those are the only two bands I would know that you just mentioned,
yeah.
Pixies and Mastodon.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And Mastodon, yeah. I only know because like they're local, right?
Yeah, they're from Atlanta, Georgia. They're just about to go on tour. They're playing.
Oh, I remember, and everybody was making a big deal when they got on like Letterman. People were like, holy shit, because they were like,
they were just on. Who were they on recently? Either Colbert or somebody else. They'll be at the Fox October 6th.
All right, what is the best live show you've experienced here
in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Oh, man. The Faith No More show at Masquerade Music Park was definitely top five.
Right.
That Metallica show at Lakewood when Newstead was in the band and they came back to make up for the debacle at the Dome was just one of the best sounding shows I've ever seen, not only at Lakewood but from Metallica.
Right.
And then 32 years full circle. I see Metallica in 85.
Right.
I go to SunTrust Park. I'm pretty good friends with Chris Jericho, the wrestler.
Right.
Because I know a couple of the guys in his band, Fozzy.
Right.
So me and Rich, the guitar player from Fozzy, were talking. Rich is like, I'm going to call up Volbeat. They're opening. They're a band from Europe. They're opening for Metallica on this tour. I'll get a couple of tickets. Next day, he talks to Chris Jericho. Jericho's like, nah, I'll just call Lars Ulrich and get us some tickets. So we go to the show. Chris is way, way backstage talking to people, interviewing Avenged Sevenfold and stuff. So me and Rich go sit in our seats. They're great seats. What's this laminate for, I wonder? It's for the fucking snake pit. So we're in the snake pit, right? You know, they're right there.
Wow.
In front of 60,000 people. And they're about to get into Seek and Destroy, where they go out to the end of the catwalk and they take the smaller drum kit, you know. And as the song starts, and I realize that the guy who played bass in Metallica before the late, great Cliff Burton was a guy called Ron McGovney. Him and James and Lars all lived in the house together in California. And so a lot of the first album was written in that house. So I'm like, you're fucking Ron McGovney. He's like, what are you doing in Atlanta? I'm just here for the show. And as they start Seek and Destroy, he's like, yeah, and they wrote this in my living room.
Wow.
So 32 years of seeing Metallica, that moment for me. I
want to cry.
I could have died there. I could have died. And I knew it was McGovney because I hadn't seen pictures. I'd seen young pictures of him. But Jericho had gone backstage and got pictures with McGovney. So I just looked up, and it was pretty crammed in the snake pit. And all of a sudden, he's standing there with his kid. And I was just like, if I walked out of here and got hit by lightning, I'd be fine. You know, so definitely the Faith No More and the Metallica shows. I mean, I've seen some.
Do you watch
King's
wrestling?
King's X. I've got to mention them. King's X, top five band from Texas. First sold them in 1987, opening for Anthrax. The reason they opened for the cartoon thrash metal band Anthrax was they were on the same indie label called Megaforce. I had never heard or seen a band like King's X because I was into Rush, and they were a three piece band too. I had never seen musicianship like this or a guy who could sing like this. And to this day, they played 37 Main when it was still open in Johns Creek last year. And again, the same kind of thing where I've got every album. I've been to every show. I've seen them at Smith's Old Bar. I've seen them at festivals. I introduced them on my birthday at Music Midtown on the 96 Rock stage, not once but twice, because they got up to go. Hey, give it up for King's X from Houston, Texas. Bass amp had quit between line check and then. So they fixed the bass amp. I came back and introduced them a second time.
Right.
So anyway, anything that King's X does.
Not to
amazing.
Be confused with the band called X.
Nothing to do with a band called X, who I also opened for in a band called The Veins that I was in. I was in a band called The Veins for 6 months, about a year and a half of my life in Atlanta.
Is it possible that you and I could talk for 3 hours, by the way, yep. just about this?
Yeah.
Do you ever get bored talking about music?
No.
Because I felt the same way with Steve, but I intentionally, because you got to understand, like, and again, I'm sure you hear this from all the time, like that.
Steve's an encyclopedia of everything.
Well, he's an encyclopedia, but also yep. you have to remember, like, I am of that age.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, when Nirvana came out, and like blew all of our fucking minds.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd never heard anything like it before.
Yeah.
And then 99X came and like, wait a minute, so there's a radio station where I can hear
all that stuff.
XTC mm-hmm. and Elvis Costello. Nobody played that.
I think that's the classic rock, future of classic rock radio in this time.
That's what he was saying.
I don't understand why certain stations who are doing the alternative thing don't just say
classic.
I know why, because a couple years ago when we had a station called X107, right?
Right.
X107.1, it was a cock station going up against Radio 105.7. And I said, I said to the program director, why don't you play more classic alternatives? Like, it doesn't test well. So it was always going to be Imagine Dragons and whoever the other indie bands
but
are.
But if you're my age, that shit's the bomb.
And you have money to spend.
Absolutely.
So clients are going to like that. So I think there's going to be, at some point in this time, there's going to be a station that says, this is the old 99X.
Right.
I would think.
Well,
I don't know why.
Well, and Steve was saying how there's so many of us in Atlanta that are so connected to it that he says whenever he posts something with the logo, people go nuts. Yeah. I said, dude, you should just start it. You should just start a show, like, you know, and just make it happen somehow because, yeah, it seems
well,
like.
You know, he has a digital station on the river. It's part,
right,
the other
right.
side of
and
the
he
river.
And he says, right, the other side of the river.
And that's the kind of an afterthought, but it's there. It's
right.
Like, if you have a digital radio, you can get
which
it.
Which nobody has.
You get a website and get it. You can listen to it on iHeartMedia, too.
Right.
iHeartRadio.
But yeah, so for him, like he was like my, you know, he
yeah.
was my drive time or afternoon
yeah,
radio
yeah,
guy.
Yeah.
Like I was
me too. Before I even got in radio, I knew Steve Craig was.
I was a courier and I was driving around Atlanta, right,
yeah.
listening to fucking him.
Like, you know, I became good friends with Axel before I was ever in radio. Axel was doing afternoons and he was doing nights at 99X.
Right.
And I called up as a listener before I was ever involved in radio and won Foo Fighter tickets for Masquerade Music Park.
That's awesome.
As a thank you, when I went to get the tickets, I gave him a European compilation CD. I was in a band called Spud Gun in the UK for like 6 months.
You keep mentioning all these random bands.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. The band Tangerine, they weren't big, right?
No. No, I was never in anything that really made a dent.
I feel like there was a band called Something Tangerine before. Wasn't there a...
Yeah, Tangerine Dream, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
not them.
Tangerine was just, I was in a band called 60 Cycle Hum. Guitar player quit. We got a new guitar player. We called it Tangerine. It was nothing to do with Led. It wasn't a Led Zeppelin tribute band, whatever. Original and some covers. But I was in a band. The last original band I was in the early 2000s was called The Veins. Greg Lee, who I've mentioned before, you know, he's in Yacht Rock, bass player. Dave Cobb, who you may have heard of. He's the guy who's producing Chris Stapleton, Sturgill Simpson, Jason Isbell, and changing Nashville right now. You know Chris Stapleton, right?
I don't.
Chris Stapleton is the country guy who's like the real deal. He's not this plastic pop Florida Georgia Line bullshit.
Right.
Chris Stapleton, before we ever knew who Chris Stapleton was, he had writing credits on 150 songs for huge Nashville artists. So my buddy Dave Cobb leaves Atlanta. Veins falls apart. He leaves and the Veins falls apart. He goes to LA to produce for an agency. So he's basically in a studio with 50 other producers, or in a, it's part of an agency, different studios, and they feed him projects. One of the most successful things he does during his time in LA is Waylon Jennings, Shooter Jennings' son. Does two records for him, they're pretty big.
You mean Waylon's son, Shooter?
Yeah, Shooter, yeah.
Right.
Did I not say that?
You said Waylon, you said it the other way around.
No, okay,
it's okay.
Yeah, Shooter Jennings' son. No, Waylon's son, Shooter.
Right.
So Dave's like, well, if I'm going to be known for doing some alt country here, I'm going to Nashville.
Right.
He gets to Nashville, Chris Stapleton happens, and the roof, it's, dude, they're all winning awards, Grammys, everything, you know. Then Jason Isbell, who was with the Drive-By Truckers, goes out by himself, Dave produces his records, top of the Americana charts, Sturgill Simpson, same thing's going on with that, and dude, he even produced a record for Europe,
the
Final Countdown Europe, because there's a band called the Bastard, Bastards, no. Rival, is it Rival Sons or Bastard Sons? Rival Sons, I think. Dave did their record. They're more rock band.
Right.
Somebody from Europe, one of the guitar players, heard that record. He's like, says to their manager, we need this guy because we want those tones. And a friend of mine said to Dave Cobb after he did the Europe record, how was the Europe record? He's like, oh, I made an AC/DC record for Europe, basically, with the way it was, the song structure and everything. So that band was the last band I was in, the Veins. And that was awesome. And Darren Dalba is a drummer who was one of the best drummers ever to come out of this town. He's touring with a guy called Anderson East right now, who I think Dave may have produced too. Anderson East, he's a white guy, very soulful voice, very throwbacky voice, like gravelly. It's awesome. Like horn section, all this stuff. And they've been opening for Chris Stapleton. Chris Stapleton's huge, dude.
I'll have to look into it.
Yeah, he's huge. I don't know what your question was going into that.
I can't remember either. We're more on the Atlanta quiz. What is your least favorite thing about Atlanta and you can't say the traffic?
Well, I get the traffic. I don't live in the burbs. I live in the city. That's why I don't have to deal with it.
Right.
Least favorite thing. Man, I don't know. I've made this home for 21 years because I like the town, you know. I don't like the sports fans who don't like their teams when they don't win. I don't like that part of it. You should support your team no matter what.
I agree, which gets us to our last question, which is rank these in order of importance to you. Falcons, Braves, United.
I know you had reservations about United.
You can say it first.
And like I say, I really enjoyed my experience last Wednesday at Mercedes-Benz. That's why I'm wearing the hat number. I like the hat. I don't normally wear these big hats, but like, it's a cool hat. I like Atlanta United. I want them to succeed. I think it's good for the city. But I think the Falcons are first for me because with what's going on with NFL and with the great season, I don't give a shit about the Super Bowl. You're playing the Patriots. You're playing Tom Brady. Anything's possible. You know, I think Matt Ryan's a stand-up guy. I've got a story about Matt Ryan when we get done with this. But Falcons, United, Braves for me. And Tony Gonzalez used to come to Meddlesome on a Monday with his wife when he was in the Falcons. They'd have a home game.
Right.
And they'd show up on a Monday night. And it used to be just him and his wife. Then he'd start bringing a few players.
Any of them sing?
His wife would, to begin with.
What would she sing?
She'd sing... here's the deal. They wanted to do Bonnie Tyler, Total Eclipse of the Heart, but it wasn't on the list yet.
Right.
So back in those days, if you wanted a song that wasn't on the list, pay us $100.
Okay.
We'll learn it. And when we've learned it, for the first month, only you can sing the song.
Oh, that's so cool. You don't do that anymore?
It hasn't happened a lot lately, no.
Is it out there, though?
It could be out there if you wanted to do it.
I like it. Yeah. I like that concept. So a song you don't know.
A song the band doesn't know.
We give you $100.
Yep.
And then
I mean, it's kind of got to be in the wheelhouse of a live band, you know. But
right, like, it can't be. It
can't be an EDM song or something, like fucking right. Marshmallow or something.
But how long does it take you to learn it? A week?
Oh, they if the band, because the way Meddlesome works is they don't rehearse as a band.
Right.
I have the words, so as long as I've heard the song, I know where I'm going.
Right.
They just go home and learn their parts, and we come and play, you know.
Right.
So they would go home and learn the parts, and by the next week, they'd have it. Yeah, right. So.
And for a month, you own it. That's awesome.
So Tony Gonzalez and his wife paid for that song, and they sang it together.
Aww.
And he's Hulk. Dude, it's so funny when the Falcons walk into the Ten High.
Right.
I was like, you guys stand at the back, because nobody can see it, because you don't realize how big football players are right. until you meet them in real
Massive,
life.
Right.
So one night, I'm in the, I'm walking to the men's restroom, and it's a cubicle and a urinal, right, side by side. Tony's taking a pee he's taking a pee in the cubicle.
Right.
Like, hey, Tony, because we've met a couple times, he's super nice guy. I pee at the urinal. I turn around, not knowing who else he'd brought with him that night. Matt Ryan's standing behind me waiting to pee.
Wow.
So I'm standing there. I'm 5'6".
Right.
Maybe. And I'm just looking at it like, do you motherfuckers know how surreal this is? And they were so sweet. So from that day on, I was a Matt Ryan fan because he was cool to me in person.
Right.
I'm the same way with with rock stars. Like Ozzy Osbourne said it best.
Right.
On the treat everybody the way you want to be treated on the way up, because you never know who you're going to meet on the way down. And that goes for sports stars. And if they're cool to me, I don't care if you have a bad game or you put out a bad album. You're cool. You're a cool human being. And that goes way further than anything else, you know. So, but I think the Falcons are a good team. And we know that Julio Jones is fucking awesome. Freeman's awesome. So if they can get it together, they could be in a Super Bowl again. You know?
It's tough to get back. It's so tough to get back.
Seahawks did it a couple times in a row.
I mean, but even look at last week, right? Like, we squeaked out that win.
Oh, they were lucky.
But we say it's a game of inches, but it really is. There's so many times.
And Matt Stafford, man, he could have made, he made some bad passes all the way through the game.
But there's just, I mean.
What I'm saying is the Lions could have closed that game early.
But even the Super Bowl, like you want to call it like a choke, but you just think of like just sometimes just all those things have to happen
in
a row.
At the same time.
And so, I mean, boy, I'm originally from Boston, so I'm a Pats fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But I root for the Falcons.
Dude, I think Tom Brady's the best player that's ever played the game.
Yeah.
He's a superhero. I mean, the amount he's won, him and Belichick, that's like, you can't, there's nothing.
See, I love Belichick because Belichick doesn't play politics at all.
No,
Belichick's
he's so
just like,
deadpan, it's
right,
awesome, dude.
He could give a fuck.
No.
Right?
No. But I just think Brady's the best quarterback because look at his record. I mean, and he's 40, and he's still some of the passes he made this weekend were awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and I came here knowing nothing about American football. You know, we get that one game every year that just happened. I don't know how long the NFL's been doing that. The game
happened
in Wembley.
A long time. Now they're doing two, I think, right? At Wembley?
There was a time in England before we got satellite TV where you went from four channels to five because we got a channel called Channel 4. And on Sunday nights, Channel 4 would show NFL highlights from America. So some of my friends started to get into American football a little bit.
Well,
but it's so alien to what we know. Like,
but why? Yeah, so why do you think they even do it? Like, I know they want to grow internationally, and I guess they sell that game out, but do people really care?
They did it this time so they could take the knee during the American national anthem, but stand up for the British national anthem. How fucked up is that? What are the British public thinking? Oh, they must really hate their country, but they love us. I think it's about American-British relations, right? I think it's something to do with that.
You think so?
I think so. I mean, it creates
well,
a great revenue there.
They tried a whole European league, but it didn't work.
Yeah. Kind of like the Lingerie League. That didn't work either.
Well, I would think the Lingerie League would have a better chance of being successful than the Europe League.
You would think so, but I don't know what that's doing that. And then there was, what was the Arena League was what John Bon Jovi owned a team, didn't he?
Right.
Him and Richie Sambora bought a team.
Right.
Philadelphia, I think.
Right.
But I don't know. I think that there's so many things like football and baseball where you can't really make too many changes. It already works, you know. There's a reason people go eat hot dogs for 164 fucking games a year, you know.
Yeah, I went to that Braves game and I got me and my son one slice of pizza, one hot dog, one drink, $18.75.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the good thing about Mercedes-Benz. Arthur Blank from the get-go is like,
we're not going to kill you on the
$2
food.
Popcorn, $2 sodas, free refills,
and
$5 12-ounce beers.
And we've got local restaurants in there.
And they can't charge anymore because they're in there.
Right.
They have to charge what they would charge, like Antico Pizza, whatever.
Right.
You charge what you charge at your restaurant.
Right.
So that's one thing that irks me about when you go to a concert venue in this town and it's, what, 12, 15 bucks a beer. Yeah, they're big beers, but it's like, man, they got to make their money, I guess. That are making pizza.
All right, so what should we call this Atlanta quiz? Because you just finished it, by the way.
Okay, so I don't know. It's about Atlanta. It's about your favorite things about Atlanta. So my Atlanta.
I don't know. We'll come up with something.
Yeah,
you'll think of it on the way home. Maybe.
I'll brainstorm. I'll let you know.
All right, so listen, I'm definitely going to come on a Monday night. And remember, again, like, I got kids. I don't stay up late. I work pretty much a 9-to-5-ish. I mean, I have my own business. I can set my own hours.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I'll come down for sure. And then you got to introduce me to your...
Katie and Eric.
Right.
Awesome.
If it wouldn't trouble you.
No, dude, Eric, you know, here's the thing. This Monday is the first Monday of going 2 hours on the air. So he's all about promoting. I mean, it's the number one midday show. It's awesome. Eric would love to do it because Eric just loves to talk. That's what he gets paid to do, even more than me, because he's a talk jock. You know, he's used to talking. When me, I talk for 30 seconds a minute and play a record.
Right.
You know, Eric is a talkie. That's what he does.
Do you have any sort of social media you want to promote or just tell people to come down to Madison?
Oh, English Nick on Facebook and English Nick 67 on Instagram. I don't do much Twitter. Twitter doesn't really light me up that much.
Right.
I look at Instagram more than anything, I think, because you can just see what people... You can see from a picture what's going on with somebody's lives.
Right.
And you haven't... Facebook is so opinionated.
Right.
You know, everybody hides behind... I hate social media, to be honest. people hide behind it, man. Everybody's a fucking expert. You know, they get... Whenever there's like when a local TV news goes to a live situation,
right,
like Black Lives Matter down at the Dome or whatever it is, these racist motherfuckers would get on there and they say whatever they want. I guarantee you wouldn't walk up to a black guy and say that.
I guarantee
you
they would.
Cowardly motherfuckers. I hate all that. I hate racism. I hate racism more than anything in the world. But social media sometimes just drives me crazy because people are just, I don't know. Everyone's an expert, you know.
I agree. I think I enjoy Instagram for the same reason. You know why else? A lot of butts.
A lot of butts.
A lot of butts on Instagram.
Naked butts.
Not even naked butts. Just an awful lot of butts on Instagram. You don't notice that in your feed. You seem to be surprised.
Like when they're talking.
No, like asses.
Oh yes. Assholes. Yeah. The thing about it, social media is, before social media, and before the internet, you had friends because you liked to hang out with them. They were your friends because you got along.
Right.
You might disagree sometimes on sports and politics and music, but you still were friends.
Right.
And same with work. You work with people usually you get along with most of the time, right? If you can pick your job and stuff like that. Social media has changed all that. Now you have to put up with all these assholes you don't really know, who aren't your real friends.
Right, and you can hide them or whatever, but yeah, it takes a long time. And
I don't delete people, but I don't respond. Like, you know, Eric Von Hester always says this. Like, he doesn't really – I use it for promotion most of the time.
Right.
I did copy a video of some guy today who was an African-American guy who was going off about the knee thing.
Right.
He was basically saying, look, you NFL snowflakes, pussies, whatever – if you lose, you go home and cry, you come back and play a game next week. If real men lose, as in men who are fighting for the flag, they don't come home.
Right.
It's a great point. Great point. So, but yeah, Eric's always like, I don't post anything political because people start commenting on my political posts and then they're on my feed and it looks like that might be my point of view.
Right.
You know, so even though he's in a political craziness with WSB and he talks about a lot of politics, no social media with that. No opinions, you know. So, yeah, social media, I get it, but I don't need it. I don't have to. I know people who check in from fucking Jason's Deli, for God's sake. I don't care what you're eating for dinner. I don't care what your new baby looks like because you love that baby more than anybody else. If it was my niece or nephew, maybe.
Right.
You know, but I've probably posted shit that people don't see, but like, I think it's just people think their lives are more important than they are. And social media enables them to do that. Normally it was like, oh, so-and-so came back from vacation and they're showing us their slideshow. When's it over? I wasn't on the vacation. Probably never going to go to Istanbul. You know? So I'm the most social person in the world, but I'm more, like, you talk about downtime. I shut the doors when I'm not doing anything and veg out with the dogs and watch my favorite movies.
Do you put the phone on airplane and you just
not on airplane, but I will put it away, you know? I will. That's another thing at Meddlesome. You know, what's changed at Meddlesome in the last 14 years now is when phones first became a thing, smartphones. Oh, I'm videoing my friends singing Bohemian Rhapsody at Meddlesome.
Right.
Now it's like, look at us singing along. I've had drunk nights where girls, especially girls, where it's selfie after selfie after selfie. I'm like, a couple things here.
Right.
How many more fucking selfies do you need?
Right.
And you know who's the only person who's really interested in that selfie?
You.
You.
Right. I was going to ask you to take one, though, because, you know, I need one for the show.
Yeah, that's promoting. That's
right,
different.
Right.
But this constant duck lip thing, they suck in their cheeks. Oh, can I get my makeup? It's exhausting.
So they want to take selfies with you, though, I guess.
Sometimes. Not millennial girls, though, normally they're just like all about themselves.
Really?
Yeah. They're like, oh, look at me. I'm so important.
I would assume they'd want you.
I'm the most beautiful girl in the world. But the people who know me, one of my favorite things is when people show up at Meddlesome and they don't know I'm the host. And I start to talk and I hear the voice and they're like, are you English, Nick? And they have this most genuine freakout moment. And I love that.
Right.
Like, I'll fucking take a picture with you all day long because you genuinely listen to the radio station.
Right.
That's how I know they're listening because they know me from the voice, you know?
Right.
Not the shitty show with whoever the judges are. They need to stop these fucking voice shows, man.
I agree.
Idol's coming back.
I thought they finally stopped it.
Can anybody name anybody from The Voice who's a huge star who actually went on there? The only stars are the four people that are already stars sitting in the red chairs.
Well, you know? I think good old Kelly from the very first one. I have a soft spot for her.
Because Philip Phillips. From American Idol.
Right.
Yeah.
So Kelly Clarkson.
Her Carrie Fisher. Carrie Underwood.
Underwood, right.
And, I mean, shit, even the bald guy who was second or third, Daltrey, he gets to play and open for people from time to time.
No, but I think...
But Kelly Clarkson is the original American Idol.
She's the original American Idol, and the show wasn't a thing yet, so she just showed up in line. There were probably 20 people in line that day, and she's got some real chops.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly she's well-produced, and people write songs for her, but I think she's okay.
You know, I have younger musician friends, singers in Atlanta, who actually do original music. And you know how it is. When you're an original musician, you're fucking grinding that. You're beating your head against the wall every day trying to get your music out there. How do they do that in this day and age? Even though we have plenty of avenues to get out there via the internet and you know, and Spotify and all that stuff. So they question themselves. They're like, should I go and try out for The Voice? Well, there's, yeah, you should if you think you can win the damn thing. But am I going to look at you as a credible artist after you're done with that? I don't know. Maybe I am because I know you and I think you're awesome.
Right. Do you listen to Spotify?
You know, it's interesting. We have Pandora at Dr. Bombay's, my tea shop.
Right.
Because we usually play like 40s, 50s music just to go with the feel of the place.
Right.
So I use Pandora for that because it's $4.99 a month. It's way cheaper than Sirius Satellite, you know right. what I'm saying? But not really. I might click it on if I'm in a mood to listen to some tunes I haven't heard in a minute from other artists that are like Metallica. I might do that. But
what
I don't
do you,
usually.
What do you listen to in the car?
Oh, the radio. Because when we work in radio, you know, I listen to the river quite a bit because sometimes I want to hear what sometimes it might be something I've missed with what's going on with the station.
Right.
But I listen to competitors too to see what they're doing.
Right.
You know, over.
Can
over
we predict what's playing on the river right now? Because I know we can go to the river app, right? Doesn't it say what song?
It will say what song's playing. Was it? It's Katie. So it's. Well, I know because I was in there earlier and she did a rock block of Tom Petty at 5 o'clock. So it won't be Tom Petty. I don't know. I'd go with Zeppelin or Fleetwood Mac. Let's say Fleetwood Mac.
I'm gonna go with. You said Def Leppard or Fleetwood Mac?
No, I said Zeppelin or Fleetwood Mac.
Okay, I'm gonna go with Def Leppard.
All right.
So do you have the River app on your phone? You have
yeah,
to, right?
I do. Yeah, because I yeah.
I actually downloaded it when Nick was in the office. Okay, here we go. I'm opening it up. Pink Floyd. Guess what song?
Wish You Were Here.
Later. Oh. Their only late hit, like the late one.
See again, Pink Floyd. I know them from radio. I don't know all them.
Well, they had a hit after...
Off of not metal.
No. Off of Momentary Lapse of Reason. It's their only fucking like...
Yeah, well, I should know. I know I played it.
You want me to just say it?
Tell me.
It's Learning to Fly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Coming up soon, Fleetwood Mac,
yep.
Quiet Riot, Thin Lizzy. So does this mean in order or just... That's just coming
that's
up
order.
Soon.
That's the order.
That is the order.
And by the way, you can go on there and even though we play, because we're a classic hit station, right? We play the hits.
Right.
You can go on and say if you like, dislike, or want to hear songs more or less on the app.
And that does help your.
That helps the research,
the
yeah.
That does
Steve
it.
Craig. Steve Craig is the man who puts the music logs together.
Yeah. He doesn't give you don't have any leeway whatsoever. I mean, you probably know a thing or two about it by now.
I do, but it's a business. They have shareholders, and, you know. You don't want to play a song that's been played an hour before by another DJ.
Of course.
You know. In the old days, you know, there was Rolodexes.
Right.
That's how it used to work in classic rock before I got involved. You come in and the DJ would write down the songs that they played and put it to the back of the stack.
Right.
So you knew not to play that.
Right.
So there was more leeway then. And when I first started at 96 Rock, we had a wall of CDs. But then again, when I came in, the list had already been printed out, so I pulled the CDs I needed.
Did you put the most recent one like at the bottom? And like
no, they were alphabetical on the wall.
Okay.
But then again, that was already when program directors were scheduling the music, you know? So that's how it works.
All right.
I don't know if I should blow... I mean, people know that, right? I think that's any secret.
I don't think you're... No, I don't think you're...
I'm not going to get fired for that.
Give away radio secrets. What can you get fired for?
Well, you break some FCC rules. Just ask the regular guys.
Well, you know? Well, did they curse or did they talk some shit about somebody?
No, the first time, it was after Nipplegate, right? After Janet Jackson gets her nipple out.
And then they were going against
Germany. And then the FCC was going crazy. Right. Howard Stern, everybody.
Right.
So the regular guys, with their kind of comedy, were like, they always had porn stars come in who were going to be the feature act at the Pink Pony or whatever. Right? Because they do that. Porn right. stars, right? So they're like, well, we can't have a disgusting conversation with you the way we used to. I mean, they wouldn't get that disgusting, but you know what I'm saying? So the plan was, we're going to record this conversation with you while we go to commercial, and when we come back, we're going to flip it and play it in reverse. So you split it, right? So that way, they're saying disgusting things like the C word, like cunt and fuck and all this, but it's in reverse, and they can't get fired for it. While they're recording the fucking commercial during commercial, the board op, something wasn't right, and it went out over like a Honda commercial or something.
Right.
But talking about her putting stuff in her mouth and all this stuff.
Right.
Dude, that was it. Like they were off. They were gone. And then there was an investigation and basically Clear Channel they said, you guys are done. They were paid till the end of their contract. But then they brought them back. They brought them back on WGST, the news talker at Clear Channel, where you only had regular guys would talk for 20 minutes at a time. Every 10 minutes they're breaking for news at GST or whatever, so they couldn't spread their wings. Then they finally brought them back to 96 Rock. Then they get fired again for a bit that the program director okayed, which was Laurie Wax, who was one of the regular guys, Eric's partner at the time. Every day after the show, he'd go into the bathroom, you know, whatever. And there's a Latino station that was on. it was on 105.3. The morning show was Yogi and Panda. Well, Yogi and Panda would be in the cubicles doing their business after the show, their show, and having a conversation through the cubicle wall. No, in Spanish. So Larry recorded it, came to the program director the next day. I said, I want to play this. I think it's funny. You know, Yogi and Panda and their toilet talk in Spanish. Oh, fine, do it. They do it. Yogi and Panda hear about it. They want them fired. Well, it turns out the Clear Channel were ready to get rid of the regular guys at that point, I think. So this was the straw. This was like, oh, you guys have been bad again. You're fired. And they appealed that because they were told it was okay to do it. You know, but they wanted them out of the building. And that was not long before 96 Rock was killed anyway. So then I don't think they got paid at that point. They got out of their
contract. Those are pretty extreme things. But like, what do you need to not do?
Well, if I ever did, you know, I remember one day, a few weeks back on the weekend, I was having a conversation with somebody on the phone about something, and we were both getting heated about this particular person we knew, and we were fuck this and fuck that person, blah, blah, blah. And then I realized that after I'd done the break, I hadn't killed the mic.
Right.
But luckily, the commercials were so loud, I went back and listened to it on the stream.
And you couldn't hear it.
You could barely hear our conversation. So I mean, it would be no one's gonna. I mean, you'd have to get on and be fuck this and fuck that, and you know, do something, say that for a long period of time, and somebody would have to complain about it. So the FCC got a complaint, which would normally be your competitor, you know.
Right.
You know, they jump all over that because they can break you down. And hey, if you're a number one show and they want to get rid of you, that's a good way to do it.
Do you pay attention to, like, ratings?
I'm in a situation where I'm not full-time salaried, so I don't get those perks. But I've been getting really good ratings since I went to midday this time last year.
What were you before?
I was evening, 7 to midnight, and then weekends before that. So my ratings have been great, so there's, you know, I do pay attention to it because my boss is like, well, here's a little bit extra, you know. So and it's good to have that feeling, like it's good to know that you're doing something right, you know. So I'll take it, you know. Actually, I'm on part of the Von Hessler show, so for a while there, me and him were sparring for number one and number two middays.
Right.
So I'm like, Eric, I'm helping you, but I'm hindering you too because I'm on the other down the dial, just because a lot of the 25-54, like the older end of the white male demo, listen to WSB and The River. Like if somebody goes to commercial, they'll flip over.
Right.
Of course, nowadays they can tell that easier because you have these people meters.
Right.
That's how they monitor radio now.
Yeah, I don't. If I get in the car, I put on The River. If there's a commercial on, I might flick through really quickly, but most of the time
You know what else I listen to? As I have my iTunes on my iPhone.
Right.
Sync it up to the Apple Play, and I'll listen to some of my favorite tunes that way.
Do you listen to podcasts?
No, I don't. I used to listen to Eric's when I started doing it, but I don't normally, no.
Yeah.
I know there's some great ones out there.
You know, would you listen to this one or no?
I would listen to this one, yeah.
Because you don't want to hear yourself talk?
Do you realize, maybe not this particular
this
one, but I
would
listen.
This is absolutely the longest I've had with anybody.
What's this podcast called?
The Atlanta Podcast.
The Atlanta Podcast. I would listen to it. It's Nick Tapp you're talking about? Nick, when you say Nick?
When I say, yeah, Nick who introduced us.
Yeah, Nick's right? Awesome. Yeah.
Well, and no, Nick was supposed to introduce me to you and blew it, and then either he never got around to
Steve
it
Steve made this happen.
But then because, Steve made this happen because Steve's a good guy.
Steve's a great guy. Nick Tapp, dodgy geezer, as they say where I'm from.
Dodgy?
Dodgy geezer.
Dodgy?
Yeah, a bit dodgy. And he's a ginger too. He's got that against him.
You mean we say ginger?
I know we say ginger.
No, this is a record. This is 2 hours, 8 minutes.
Awesome.
We have to split this up into two episodes. All
right.
But thanks for talking to me, dude.
You're very welcome, man.
Good to see you.
Yeah, this is a pleasure. I'll do it again sometime, and I will definitely get Von Hessler and Katie Kiley down here for one. They'd love to do it. I know they would.
All right, cool deal. There you have it. As I said at the beginning of the episode. Drop me a line on Facebook. Drop me a line on social. Let me know where you're listening, especially if you're from outside of Atlanta. If you're outside of Georgia, you get double secret extra credit. Drop me a thing on iTunes. It takes but a moment. Just stop what you're doing. You've wanted to do it. You haven't done it yet. Just do it. Let us know what you think over here at the Atlanta Podcast. I've got tons of stuff in the book, as I said. So we're going to keep doing this thing for a long time. Hope you enjoyed English, Nick. Love you, miss you, mean it. I have got to run. We'll be right back.
Ah.